This is Scott Berguin at KSOW-LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We have on the phone, actually, Celeste Zapala, who is the mother of Sergeant Sherwood Baker, who is the first Pennsylvania National Guardsman to die in combat in Baghdad since, not in Baghdad, but at all, since 1945, about a year and a half ago, and ironically while protecting the Iraq Survey Group as they looked for weapons of mass destruction. Long introduction. How are you doing, Celeste?
I'm doing okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I decided to call you because of a short letter from you. I don't know if it went in short, but it came out short on commondreams.org. Basically, it's titled An Open Letter to Wealthy Patriots from a Gold Star Mother. Of course, you are a Gold Star Mother.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more background about this and what's led you to write this piece?
George Bush is going to be in Philadelphia, where I live, on Monday. He'll be addressing the World Affairs Council. And I didn't learn about this till a couple days ago, and many other peace people in Philadelphia heard it and decided that we should have a presence there because George Bush is going to be speaking about the reasons why we should be in Iraq. And at first I had a thought that maybe I should try to get a ticket to go in and try to see him, because I had been in Texas this summer with Cindy and Sue Niederer and a number of other Gold Star families to try to meet with George Bush. And of course, you know that he drove past us and refused to meet with any of us.
Right.
So I inquired about trying to get into the event, perhaps, and then found out that the highest price tickets, the tickets that would get you close to the front and possibly get access to Bush, cost $10,000, which I thought was just extraordinary.
Yes.
Once again, Mr. Bush has decided to be in a situation where real people can't possibly get to speak to him.
Right. And, so is this a fundraiser?
It's World Affairs Council is a place that hosts speakers, and I was pretty astonished by the price. And I'm not sure who the money goes to, if it goes to the Republican Party, if it goes to George Bush. I found it amazing that a ticket to hear him speak about America's war should cost so much money and should just by definition be impossible for anyone who's connected to military service to afford to go in. So the thought came to me that perhaps I could appeal publicly to some of those people with their $10,000 tickets, and maybe one of them wants to give it up for me. I actually don't anticipate that I will hear from anybody, but it was a thought that I wanted to share, that the only way to be able to ask to be recognized by the president is to pay $10,000 to try to get in to see him, and then maybe even then, I don't know if he would speak to me or not, but I thought it was worth a try, and I just felt moved to write that. I'll be outside the hotel anyway, along with members of my family and other Gold Star families, and our friends Nancy Lesson and Charlie Richardson who are the founders of Military Families Speak Out, will be in Philadelphia. So we'll all join together, along with Vets for Peace and Iraq Vets Against the War. We'll stand outside for 3 hours and be a witness to our need to speak the truth about the war, and to particularly ask that question that remains unanswered, which is, you know, what is the noble cause?
Well, I had kind of a flippant question, I have to admit, forming in my brain, and I was going to ask the question, how much is it going to cost you to stand outside the hotel? But then I realized it's kind of a, if not naive, a kind of cold question, because you, of course, along with all the other Gold Star family members, have paid an incredible price.
Right, we already paid. That's
yes.
What I always think of, you know, except we already paid.
You've already paid.
But for me, you know, this is my city, this is where my son grew up. This man is going to be here, and he's directly responsible for my son's death and for the death of 2,137.
Yeah, I think it's 39 now. 39? Something like that, yes.
And, you know, I know that sometimes people don't hear it that way, you know, of direct responsibility, but, you know what, I believe in accountability. And, you know, I used to admire, you know, Harry Truman, you know, the buck stops
mm-hmm.
here.
Right.
But with this administration, it stops nowhere. No one is responsible for any mistakes. No one's responsible for decisions that get made mm-hmm. or things that go wrong. You know, it's appalling to me. You know, it's one more piece of how painful this all is that no one will ever be accountable for Sherwood mm-hmm. being lost, looking for the weapons of mass destruction.
So you have that sense, don't you? That strong
Absolutely.
Sense that regardless of what happens in this, I mean, this war will end eventually.
Sure. Eventually it'll be over, and people will come home. And then the question, I guess, you know, that I think about all the time is, well, who will the people be? You know, how many? We're coming up on 1,000 days
mm-hmm.
of the war, and we have 2,100 dead.
Mm-hmm.
So at least two a day
mm-hmm.
are dying. So how many days will it be before it's over? And who will they be? Who will the two be every day?
Right.
And in Iraq, how many more? You know what? How many people are enough before it's over? It's not academic. It's not a joke for those of us who have to live without the people we love.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you've thought about this, and you've probably been asked this before, but let's just say, we'll go into fantasy world here for a while, and George Bush actually decided to give you the space to ask your question and say what you wanted to say to him. What would you say?
Well, first I would want him to know what a really wonderful person Sherwood was,
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, insist that he look at my pictures of him and that he hear Sherwood's story and,
mm-hmm.
and sense him as a human being. Then I would want to know why he would think that going to war could possibly be a first option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he and I share something. We're both United Methodists.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I understand our religion is that we have great responsibility not only towards our God, but towards our fellow human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we are charged to seek peace. We are charged to be peacemakers. And how this man who has never, and you know, it strikes me that George Bush has probably never suffered much worse than a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
How could he sentence so many people to turmoil and danger and ultimately death by choosing a war against all the principles of this country, all the principles that our country stands for, everything that has made us unique among nations, to betray all of that? How did he reach that decision,
mm-hmm.
and how does he square that with God? I guess that would be my question.
Well, I think that you've the depth of what you're asking, you know, that it's obvious that it comes from your heart. I think that you've hit the nail on the head, so to speak, that as to why, one of the main reasons why he really doesn't want to be in the position of having to be asked questions and have to deal with it. I don't think there's an answer.
No, I don't think there is either.
And I think that, I mean, do you feel that this, the war in Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, was, as they're trying to spin it now, in my mind, trying to spin it
mm-hmm.
anyway, that it's just, we went with the best intelligence we had at the time, and it turns out that, oops, it wasn't that great? Or do you think it's more to do with, as a lot of people believe, that they just were determined to go after Iraq?
No, I think that they were quite determined that there was going to be a war. I mean, all the documentation that I've read about, and I try to read everything I can
mm-hmm.
find, and to be, you know, to be discriminating. But, you You know, obviously the people around George Bush had been planning for quite a while to rearrange the Middle East and had desired to attain power in Iraq and to get rid of Saddam. And there's no defense on my part of Saddam Hussein, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things that sometimes gets overlooked is that he was our boy for a long time. And those weapons were weapons that we helped him buy and build. And when he gassed the Kurds, we didn't say a thing. And Rumsfeld, that famous picture of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein was taken after the Kurds were killed.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, there's, you know, the consequence of bad policy is pretty obvious. And, so, you know, I don't think there's like a morality at work that says, oh, we're going to free the Iraqis and we're going to, you know, get rid of a bad man. There are a lot of bad men in power across the world. One can look at Africa. One can look at China.
Mm-hmm.
And China certainly possesses extraordinary weaponry. North Korea. I mean, there's no shortage of despots that we could go after. So I don't buy any of that. And it was so clear after 9/11 that we missed an extraordinary opportunity to draw the world together. And this administration chose, instead of taking all the sympathy and compassion that the world was offering on September the 12th, they chose to take that kind of cowboy stand of, you know, you're for us or against us, it's our way or no way. We don't want to hear what you have to say. We don't want your counsel. You know, you're in this with us or you're against us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such, it's so foolish and so dangerous and has taken the lives of so many people, and it could have been different.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we were sort of set on a course a long time ago. And how do you correct all that? You know, you correct it with having leadership that has some sensibility, some humility,
mm-hmm.
and that that is willing to listen to the wisdom of other people. You know, people say, "Oh, well, there wasn't enough intelligence." You know, the intelligence was wrong, but you know, millions and millions of people across the globe were begging this administration not to go to war,
right?
Including the Pope, whom I held in high esteem, and supposedly George Bush did too.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was asking that we wait, and there didn't, you know, and it was kind of this hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Well, why? And obviously, there was not a plan for a victory. You know, it's not only, you know, it would be another thing if they had gone in and at least had realized that once they got control of the country, they were going to be totally responsible for it,
mm-hmm.
and had some idea how to do that. I mean, to take out Saddam, to demolish the army, to blow up the infrastructure, and then not have a plan to immediately put things back together. I mean, it's just the height of arrogance to me that that wasn't part of the planning, and also that the administration refused to listen to their own military leaders who were telling them that the plan that they had wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
That there was danger in that plan, and General Zinni is actually a relative of ours, and shared with us that, you know, that they could predict everything that was going to go wrong,
mm-hmm.
that all went wrong.
Right. Well, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world has seen this before. And I wanted to comment on, you're talking about the after September 11th, they obviously turned that whole thing, the world, on its ear.
Right.
And also, you're talking about the bad men of the world, and you can make a list of
right.
Bad people. And most people, our fellow countrymen, unfortunately still, I don't think, get this, but if you went outside the United States, the boundary, just cross across the boundary anywhere and ask that question, list the right. so-called bad men of the mm-hmm. world, George Bush would be probably at the top.
Yeah.
And that is the strongest indication of, to me anyway, of what their policies have done in terms of internationally, and then what position that puts our country in, and of course our soldiers who are out there right on the front, what position it puts them in. Yeah, and yeah, not only today
right.
and next week, but you know, 5 years, 10 years down.
Right. How do we ever regain the trust of the rest of the world?
Right.
And how do we make amends for this? I mean, you know, I'm one of those people who actually believes that democracy is an extraordinary opportunity,
mm-hmm.
And I really believe in citizenship. I really believe in responsibility towards people in my country and people, other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel this is such a tragedy that we've subverted democracy. And I don't know how it gets repaired. I really don't. How do we regain the trust and love of the world that we used to have? You know, people used to look up to us, and you know, we had moral authority.
All right.
This whole issue of torture I find it unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear about it, I really have to turn the radio off and
hear it.
It's so awful to think that that this is what my countrymen are doing, and for some perverted sense that saving people. I mean, when did we hear that torture worked?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Isn't it proven that people will say anything? I mean, how and hasn't that happened over and over again, that people have said particular things that we wanted to hear.
Right.
So how does that work? And how is it that we can hold those people in Guantanamo and in Afghanistan and never hope to win their hearts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Washington told the revolutionary soldiers that when they captured the British, they should treat them with dignity and they should not torture them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we had moral leadership. We were a moral authority, and we didn't want to repeat the crimes of the European kings.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now we actually have a public debate as to what kind of torture is permissible.
Right.
And Condoleezza Rice, you know, tours Europe and talks about, you know, the exquisite details of how one is or isn't torturing, you know, or how you are, what kind of behavior may or may not be. I mean, how do we get to that? How do we get to a point where we are not able to say torture is utterly and absolutely immoral and it hurts the souls of the perpetrator and the victim? How did we get there? It's you know, the country begins to become unrecognizable.
Right, right.
It really does.
Well, I know there's the there's the, what I think would need to happen for our country to have redemption, or whatever you want to call it. And then I know there is what I think will happen. I think that the Bush administration will, and maybe already see that they're going to have to get out of Iraq, and they'll do it in a way, they spin it in a way that makes it look like it'll ignore the facts, basically, and will basically say that we've won, and then they'll just get the media, if the media goes along, they just, like they seem to have up to this point, they'll just stop covering it.
Mm-hmm.
The mayhem will continue in Iraq, and we'll just say, well, we won, they've got their democracy, we're out of here.
Right.
What I think needs to happen, frankly, and I think most of, again, our fellow citizens do not want to hear this, it's too messy, I think that all the people that are responsible for the illegal war need to face some kind of tribunal or something, that they have to be accountable. I think that's the only way. It's like the truth commissions in
right.
South Africa. People have to be confronted by what they have done and the repercussions of it, and I don't expect that to happen, but I think that would be a very soul cleansing experience for our whole country for that to come about.
I think you're right, and you know, and I keep hoping that our Congress and Senate will begin to take some responsibility, and part of what we've done in our work is go and talk to Congress people and senators, and you know, and my question that I ask them is, when they write the books 30 years from now, what are they going to say about you? Did you just stand by and let all this happen? Or did you try to speak the truth? Did you try to make it stop? Did you try to make others accountable? And surprisingly, sometimes their eyes perk up when I say that. you know, legacies, I guess, matter to some folks, although in the meantime, you know, probably while we're talking, somebody has died in Iraq.
Right. Well,
frightening.
I don't want to put you on the spot, and it's a political question. It's something I struggle with myself. It's very frustrating. But I look and say, okay, who are the people? Who are the leaders that are out there right now? And hopefully there are people that we don't even know about. But who's going to stand up? You know, in the Democratic Party, in the Republican Party, in any party that. You understand what I'm asking?
Oh, I mean, I know. I think most of them are kind of cowardly. You know, Feingold has been willing to have a voice. Chuck Hagel has been willing to have a voice. Walter Jones is willing to have a voice. You know, I'm really, 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 really disappointed with Hillary Clinton. It's just appalling. Just appalling opportunism. I so hope she doesn't become the nominee. You know, there's the Governor Warner in Virginia, who seems to have some conscience, and maybe as time goes on, you know, that some of them will, as they say, grow spines, and we'll see more heroic stature.
Right. Well, it's all part of this whole thing that's been happening from the beginning. But I know that there's people like Dennis Kucinich who are so clear, but they get marginalized right from the beginning, and it's hard to get them into a position where they even get the airtime that they need. So
Kucinich and Rangel, even Barbara Boxer, but you know, would they be capable of capturing the will of the Democratic Party, and would they be able to make the rest of America understand? I don't know if you saw Nightline last night. Ted Koppel's not on anymore. They had a woman who was interviewing a number of mothers from Ohio who had lost their kids. It was very sad.
Yeah.
And very illuminating in a way, because a lot of, I would say maybe 30% of the women were saying the war was wrong, but they couldn't convince the others. The others were saying the war was necessary and we're fighting for the freedom of the Iraqis. And I just thought, you know, if we have a long way to go before we're all reconciled each other, you know?
Right. Well, we live in a country that's, in my feeling, being a Vietnam-era person, that we've never reconciled that fully.
That's true. And you're absolutely right, and because I am too, and I used to think, before all these things happened, I used to think, okay, once we're all dead, then the Vietnam War will be over. Because the new people won't have that memory and pain in their heart. And then I realized, you know, it sets up yet for the next generation, this divisiveness and this.
Yep.
And, you know, and it's very disheartening. It's really, really disheartening.
Right. Well, it is disheartening, and I think that that's, if it may be the biggest carryover from the Vietnam War, is what has allowed the Iraq War to even happen. That same divisiveness that comes out and says that if you say anything against this policy, you are not patriotic, you're un-American, and that can happen so quickly and so it's so palpably, you know, that's there. But that leads me to the question of, I mean, it's a question we all have, and we go on ups and downs, as I'm sure you do. Where what keeps you going? I mean, there's some obvious answers to that, I think, but even the obvious ones are okay. What keeps you going, and where do you find the hope to counteract the all the other emotion
right.
that
well,
goes with this?
Well, you know, I'm blessed with a wonderful family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my remaining family are very close with them, and we support each other, and we're working together.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a community of very dedicated people, and my religious community has always been a great source of strength and comfort to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I said I feel a great sense of responsibility, and by working with other people who feel an equal sense of responsibility, there's hope in that. You know, somebody once said to me, it's like it's our responsibility to carry hope. And I embrace that thought.
Mm-hmm.
I try my best not to function out of anger. And sometimes I can be sarcastic and flippant, but I really work hard at trying to actively love the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can try to do it best.
Right.
You know, not only the people closest to me, but you know, the vision I have of the way that I would hope the world would be for my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I draw comfort, and you know, I really treasure the people who live around me and whose work I share.
Oh, very good. I mean, obviously, all the people that I've had the privilege to talk to that are in Gold Star families, it's an amazing reservoir of strength that folks come from, and clarity, incredible clarity. And I've pointed this out before to other people, that one might expect to talk to someone and get, you know, a lot of emotion, which, you know, obviously there's emotion there for good reason, but everybody that I've talked to, including yourself, are just obviously incredibly thoughtful, have thought this out, have looked at, as you said, you look at all this information, you think about it, turn it over, whatever, and I think it points to me why Gold Star family is, of course, the most prominent person that everybody knows about is Cindy Sheehan, but I've actually never talked to her. I've talked to other folks like yourself,
right.
And that depth of commitment and, again, knowledge and clear knowledge goes through everybody I've talked to. It's very admirable, and again, it's a privilege to be able to talk to you, and I've talked to other people in your family as well. It's I agree, the Zapalas are definitely a strong point in this movement.
We are joined really and upheld by amazing folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
right. Well, so tomorrow again, not tomorrow, Monday,
mm-hmm.
President Bush is in Philadelphia. You'll be outside, it looks like.
Yep.
With others, hopefully a lot of others. And is there anything else you want to say to folks, or anything you're looking forward to that's coming up as well that you'd like to share?
Well, I think that, you know, unfortunately the 1,000th day of the war is approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would hope that people would mark that and commemorate that.
Do you know what day that is exactly?
It's someplace between Tuesday and Wednesday.
It's going to be easy,
you know,
enough to figure out, wouldn't it?
Because the time is different between here and Iraq.
This coming Tuesday and Wednesday. Oh, all right.
Yeah, so that... you know, I would just think that and hope that people would hold that in their heart, that
mm-hmm.
is yet another dreadful milestone that needs to be observed, that needs to be acknowledged, and that we should keep continually holding representatives accountable. You know, there should be no free days. You
mm-hmm.
know?
Right.
And when I speak to people, I urge people to do something for peace every day. Do something that furthers the cause of peace every day.
Right. Well, That's very good. Well, we know you're thinking about it every day, and there's a lot of us that there isn't a day that a lot of our mental energy and emotional energy isn't spent on thinking about this war, the war's toll, and constantly thinking about what do we need to do to bring this thing to an immediate, if not sooner, end.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Celeste. I appreciate and I feel privileged to be able to talk to you, and thank you for sharing with us. And again, yeah, thank you. I mean, we'll get
sure,
this out
I'm
as
glad you called
far and wide as possible.
You should call me again, okay?
We'll do it.
Okay.
We'll do it. Say hello to Al, please.
I surely will.
Okay, and have a great day, and good luck on Monday.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Take
bye-bye.
Care.
Yeah, bye.
I was talking to Celeste Zapala, mother of Sergeant Sherwood Baker, Pennsylvania National Guardsman who was killed in Baghdad, April 26, 2004, while protecting the Iraq Survey Group as they looked for weapons of mass destruction. This is Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove. Thank you for listening.